Hare Krishna, nice to be back here again. I'm sorry we haven't come earlier, but as is usual for being in the UK, it's a very busy place. Don't bump against the computer, okay. And just remember, generally when I come, then I like to continue on with presentations on Varnashrama, and this is going to be more of the same. But particularly, I like to concentrate on one quality of a human being, and that's satisfaction. If you remember, we went through a presentation which Narada Muni gives in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. And of the topic of Varnashram, Srimad Bhagavatam has seven full chapters. Two of those are spoken by Krishna in the 11th canto, and the other five is by Narada in the seventh canto, which is a lot, because out of 180 chapters, then you have seven, which is running around, I don't know, 4% or something like that. So the 4% of the Bhagavatam is about Varnashrama. And Narada Muni introduces the topic by first talking about what the qualification is for one to accept and then actually be a practitioner. This is a characteristic quality or a characteristic feature of Shastra, is that whatever topic it teaches, it always establishes and stresses what the qualification of that topic is, which is nothing really new. The qualification for university is that you've gone to high school. The qualification for high school is that you've gone to elementary school. You just can't jump from nursery to a PhD course. You have to be systematically taught and elevated. And interestingly, of course, Varnashrama is for more or less all human beings. It's the qualification, or it's that by which one becomes qualified to become interested in spiritual life. It is not the qualification for bhakti, for devotional service. Now, this is a question. What's the one-word qualification for devotional service? Gentlemen? Ladies? Huh? No. Huh? Just one word. No, you guys are Gyanis. No. Okay, I thought you had a training course here in the bhakti. The qualification for bhakti is faith. Ado Shraddha. You've heard that word before, right? So it begins with faith. That's the only qualification for bhakti, is faith. And faith you acquire by sadhu sangha, by associating with Vaishnavas. Now, generally, people will not come into the association of Vaishnavas unless there's a social structure that facilitates it, although it may happen. And therefore, the systematic elevation of people so that conditioned souls, so that they can actually develop faith in Shastra, the association of devotees, in Krishna himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is that they should participate in the Varnashram system. And once one comes to devotional service, then the social framework and the lifestyle of how a devotee lives is described by the characteristics of the mode of goodness as practiced in a Brahminical culture, and it's described in Shastra under the category of karma, and karma in this case usually refers to Varnashrama. So there are 30 qualifications for 30 characteristics that qualify one to take up Varnashram. 21 of those we named as being religious qualities, of which the satisfaction is one. And the other 9 are Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Archanam, Padasevanam, and so on. The other 9 limbs of devotional service. So you can say, well, why is it that someone's already got to chant Hare Krishna in order to chant Hare Krishna? And that's because people will do this necessarily without faith. They do it as a ritual. They do it because it's tradition. They do it because it's a family custom. And by doing that as a compulsory aspect, then in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, you find this phrase, bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya, is that bhakti begets bhakti. So sadhana bhakti gives prema bhakti. Similarly, even bhakti abhas, or the shadow of devotional service, results in real devotional service or pure devotional service. So anyabhilashita shunyam. And the qualification for pure devotional service is faith. Okay, don't forget, this is like, you know, really ABC stuff. Okay, so today I just wanted to concentrate on this one characteristic, satisfaction, and it's something that one could actually really talk about a lot, because in one sense it's actually the root of many other good qualities that human beings and Vaishnavas are meant to have, and it's also the root of spiritual advancement, as we'll see from Krishna's own statements in the Bhagavad Gita. And I'm going to just introduce you, well, we're going to start with how karmis define. Oh, I need a microphone for give it to Dayal, and then Dayal, you can do the English for me. And this is the definition. Go ahead.
Fulfillment of one's wishes, expectations or needs, or the pleasure derived from these.
Okay, maybe you can make it just a little louder so you can hear. So he says, fulfillment of one's wishes, expectations or need, and the pleasure derived from these. So this is a typically mundane description of satisfaction because it's based on selfishness. It's based on the fact that I have desires, I have expectations, I have material needs that I'm trying to fulfill. And why? Because I'm going to get satisfaction, happiness from those things. And the result of that happiness and the fulfillment of these things is that, oh, now I'm satisfied. But of course, we know that that satisfaction never really comes. Or if it comes, it comes for a brief period of time, and then people, again, lose satisfaction. So it's not real satisfaction as a spiritual or a religious ingredient, which is integral for someone to be a good person. Because a good person has knowledge, a good person thinks about what he does. And as we'll see, this type of definition for satisfaction makes us actually lose our balance, our equilibrium, and pursue so many unnecessary things in this world. But I'd like to start with another definition now, and this is the definition of the Bhagavatam. And I'm just going to stand a little in your way here. Unfortunately, I don't know this verse off by heart. Could have pushed this a little further back. Then, can you do that? And is it still in focus? Oh, that's better. Let's. Okay. Okay. Let's read together, since we haven't read a verse this morning. Sada santushta manasa.
Sada santushta manasa.
Sarva shiva maya disha.
Sarva shiva maya disha.
Sharkara kantaka dibyo.
Sharkara kantaka dibyo.
Yatopana pada shivam.
Yatopana pada shivam.
Translation.
For a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there is no danger, even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. For him, everything is auspicious. Similarly, for one who is always self-satisfied, there is no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere.
This is a really beautiful verse, beautiful shloka. It's something you could add to your list of memorizing verses. I found it to be very, very instructive. And very, very clear. It has very clear imagery that if you've got good shoes, and all of you are going to go outside with shoes, and you walk along the path here at the manor, and there's so many pebbles over there, and I don't think there's so many thorns here, but if you walked around elsewhere, there would be. And it doesn't matter, because wherever you go, your shoes are protecting you. So Narada, this is Narada speaking, he's giving the same example that if you learn this art of being satisfied and being self-satisfied, if you learn the art of being satisfied, and it's actually a sadhana, it's something that one has to cultivate, then whatever you're walking along the path of devotional service, walking along the path back to Krishna, and it's not necessarily a thornless path. There are a lot of pebbles, there's a lot of stones, there's a lot of thorns on the way. But still, if, as you remember, this expectation from the previous definition, you don't have these high expectations, you don't have many desires that you're looking to get fulfilled and enjoy material happiness, then actually you'll be protected along the way. So it's important, then he says, you feel happiness. He won't feel distress, he'll be self-satisfied, there's no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere. So it's a nice, really nice imagery. And I just want to go back to what I said a moment ago about how this quality is not something that, whoops, I just acquire it and it's there. Like most things, whether they're real transcendental qualities, or when we talked about faith. Okay, you have faith, but faith is a word. But there are different degrees of faith. And there are faith which is very very pliable and very fresh, is the faith of a neophyte, and there can be different types of faith there. Faith that's really rooted in knowledge, in scriptural knowledge, becomes deeper faith. It's the faith of an intermediate devotee. And faith that's actually comes as a consequence of realization. In other words, seeing Krishna. That then becomes the deepest type of faith, which is the faith of a Uttama Adhikari, of a self-realized Vaishnava. And even amongst those, it's not that there's three types of faith. There's many levels of development of faith itself. So similarly, when we talk about, and you have to cultivate it. You have to cultivate faith, as we said earlier. It's by association of Vaishnavas, by hearing, by chanting, the process itself develops and nurtures that faith. Similarly, satisfaction, we have this phrase, learn to be satisfied with what you have. How do you go about learning it? So it's also something that we practice. We practice satisfaction and practice satisfaction to get to this stage where it doesn't matter what situations, what confrontation we come face to face with, or on the other side, what temptations come before us, we're satisfied. And I'm just going to here list satisfied with six different types of things. And There are more, at least in terms of my meditation, there are more things that one can be satisfied with. But here are six that are important and integral, especially when we're talking about the Varnashram institution. And one is that we're satisfied with being spirit, soul, and not this body. I mean, if we were satisfied with being spirit souls, we wouldn't be here in the material world. We have a sense of dissatisfaction, and we wanted to expand our enjoyment. So Krishna bahir mukya hona bogya vancha kare. So therefore, we turn towards the material body. Ooh, maybe we're going to get more, and maybe we're going to be happier, and maybe we can be like Krishna if we have this facility that places us in the illusion that we're going to be independent enjoyers. So it's something to meditate about. It's quite an interesting thing, being satisfied with being spirit, soul, and what comes along with that. Because being satisfied with spirit, soul also means you have to be satisfied with being a what? A servant. Are we satisfied with being a servant? Now, that's a real problem for us. You know, we're brainwashed to be a master. We are competing with Krishna. We're all Krishna's competitors, which is very, very humorous thing. It's like, you know, ants trying to compete with a cheetah. And what is the cheetah thinking about all these little ants scurrying along and thinking that they're competitors? They're never going to be able to keep up. And satisfied that the goal of life is self-realization and not sense gratification. I cited earlier, we have this verse, Anyabilasita Sunyam, that a definition of pure devotional service. Well, why does Rupa Goswami start off Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu with the definition of pure devotional service? Because there's impure devotional service also. Impure devotional service means that some devotees have not only their goal of pleasing Krishna, but they also have a goal for different types of sense enjoyment. They have other plans for going perhaps to the heavenly planets. When Srila Prabhupada first wrote, when he wrote the letter to Jananda Prabhu's disappearance, or at Jananda Prabhu's disappearance, then he said, well, if you still have some material desire, then you'll go to the heavenly planets. And then having fulfilled those desires, then from there you'll go back home, back to Godhead. But then Srila Prabhupada, when later he heard about how actually Jananda left this world, then he said, no, then he went directly back to Godhead. So, but there is such a thing. There's such a thing as mixing devotional service with not only sense gratification, but also a desire for liberation. And that desire for liberation is much more subtle than the desire for sense gratification, and maybe more difficult to give up. In other words, that I want to be happy. That I want to be free from anxiety, I want to be free from the headaches of what it takes to manage a Krishna consciousness movement, what to speak of being part of a Krishna consciousness movement, the different conflicts that come up, that I just want a nice, peaceful life. Maybe I should just retire away to Vrindavan and chant Hare Krishna, because then I'll be liberated from all of these things. But jnana karma dhyana vrittam. But the definition says, no, you have to be willing to accept all kinds of headaches and all kinds of difficulties in Krishna's service. What makes Krishna pleased? So if it makes Krishna pleased, that I have to actually, therefore, go through different inconveniences, then I'll accept that, as the last verse of Shikshashtakam says. So being satisfied with, yes, that we're exclusively, this is Eke Ha Kuru Nandana, we only have one direction, and that is self-realization. The next one is, and this is what Srimad Bhagavatam concentrates on, it's what we're going to concentrate on also, being satisfied with what we need. And, you know, there's these two things. Satisfied with what you need, and to try to fulfill all the things that you want. And we're living in a world that's trying to convince everyone that no matter how much they get, it's never enough. More and more and more. This is what advertisement is all about, advertising is all about. It's about making people greedy. In other words, that the world is not enough. No matter how much you get, you always need more. So, do we live by what we actually need? We don't. We as devotees don't live by what we need. Just like yesterday, we had lunch. And one devotee said, well, if there was more curd in the sabji, then I'd be eating more. But do we need to eat curd every single day? And is it actually feasible? So if you ask the Goshala, is it possible to feed everyone curd every day? They'll say, no, it's impossible. Not unless we have a herd of 5,000 cows or something like that. And is it even actually healthy? Is it even something that's within, Krishna can do it in the spiritual world, but is it something that we should be doing every day? Living by what we really need. And of course, if we're on the topic of eating, we probably don't need to eat as much as we eat. We could probably do with a lot less. But fortunately, because we're honoring prasadam, therefore, even when you overeat, you become purified. Doesn't mean you don't get sensually agitated. It doesn't mean that you don't necessarily get sick, but you certainly get purified despite all of those other handicaps. So, living by our needs, for instance, at the present time, with a good part of the world, the large proportion of the world, not having what they need to live, and another portion of the world having more than they can ever even use or engage. And some people on this planet, on the top 5% of the people on this planet have 60% of the planet's resources. So they can't neither spend their money, there's not enough things for them to, they don't have enough time, they don't have enough energy to actually engage all of the resources that they have at their command for sense gratification. So it's just like a surplus. It's something like the Roman orgies, when they would just eat, and then they would make themselves vomit again, and then they would eat again, and because they just didn't know what to do with themselves. So this planet, we are already, if you balance out humanity between the 7 billion of us, we're already consuming 50% more than the resources that this planet has. Now that's very, very impractical because it means that we're running out really quickly. So even if we were to maintain a certain type of balance, it would mean, and you could pose the question here, is everyone here willing to scale back 50% of what they're doing now? Whether it be in terms of food, in terms of clothing, in terms of money that we spend and other things, are we willing to cut back our lifestyle by 50%? In other words, go back down, or are we still going up? This sort of myth of sustainable development. There's no such thing as sustainable development. And this is the distinction between Varnashram and Krishna consciousness and material life. Material life is all about sustainable material development. And for us, Krishna consciousness and Varnashram is all about sustainable spiritual development. So the type of society that we're proposing is spiritual development. And as far as material things, just keep them to a basic need, because what we need is very favorable for spiritual life. And when we live by wants, then we're cultivating qualities that are destructive towards our own spiritual development. Kama, Krodha, Tatha, Lobha. Krishna says these are the three gates that lead to hell. So we spend a lot of time and energy talking about Kama because it is so all-consuming. And Krodha is certainly a problem, anger, but this Lobha or greed, and this is greed, taking more than what we need. And that's the quality of a Brahmin, is that he's very, very careful to actually just, what is it that I really need? And then stick to that. So that's another type of satisfaction. Being satisfied with your karma, and these two things are connected, because by my karma, I may have X resources at my command without excessive effort, but my neighbor, with maybe no effort, he has 1,000X. And so we're living in a world where we're trying to convince everyone that everyone should be able to live at the same lifestyle. I mean, that's an impossibility, just as we mentioned earlier, in terms of the resources that our planet holds. But it's also an impossibility, and much more of an impossibility, from the karmic point of view. Everyone doesn't have a karma. But we ask the question, well, isn't it true that if you really struggle hard, and if you fight for it, and sometimes you may steal for it, then you can get more than what your quota is, than what Ishopanishad says. Well, yes, you can get more now, but later on you're going to get less. So you can't get more, and this is also described in the Bhagavatam. Narada Muni also, Prahlad Maharaj describes that. Everyone's karma describes how much pleasure you're going to get and how much suffering you're going to get, and you're not going to avoid it. You can try to, just like a thief, you may think, why should I get a job? Why should I work? I'll just steal. Okay, you steal now, and you have a certain lifestyle, but after that, you're going to be spending 20 years in jail, and then you're going to have much, much less, and you're going to have lost the most valuable thing, which is that you'll have lost your freedom. So being satisfied with what our karma is, and it's quite important for devotees to know what their quota is. So Prabhupada uses this word quota, isha vashamidam cha sarvam. What's our quota? And you find out pretty easily if your lifestyle is based on 16 rounds, four regulative principles. Well, four regulative principles don't take time, but 16 rounds do. A morning program that you have so much time for yourself, so much time for your family. And then how much time do you have left? Well, say you have 8 hours a day. Okay, well, how much income do I generate by that 8 hours a day? And that's it. I'm not working more than that. My priority is spiritual development, not economic development. And by that, it may mean that I live like Sudama Vipra. Because Sudama Vipra didn't go out of his way to try to increase his position. He just accepted, this is my karma. So being satisfied with one's karma. And then his classmate, Krishna, was the king of Dwarka. But still, he just couldn't bring himself to ask Krishna or go beyond what was actually his allotted karma. It wasn't in him. And when it's not in you, that's called being a Brahmin. It's not in you to go beyond that which will sacrifice your spiritual advancement just so that I can get a little more. And now this is something that devotees really struggle with. So when I'm talking about devotees who necessarily not living in the temple, but devotees who have to work, who've got to travel 2-3 hours a day just to get to work in London, how do you balance this thing? And it's a constant dynamic that gets brought up. How do you balance the work that you have to do as well as your spiritual life? I have enough time. Because Krishna consciousness isn't about believing in Krishna. It's not just about getting through your 16 rounds. It's about going very deeply into spiritual life. It's actually a full-time job. Unfortunately, not only is Krishna consciousness a full-time job, but living in the world that we're living in today is also a full-time job, because we're living in a cold climate, so you got to have double glazing, you got to have a big house, you got to have heating, you have to pay for all of these things, and we're also in a very complex economic and social environment. So all of these things really demand a lot of time. What's the priority? So if the priority is how we're that I've got to have that bigger house, I've got to have that car, and that's where it starts, then the time is going to get lost off spiritual life. But if the priority is spiritual life, then, all right, if I end up, there's a lot of people biking into the city, if I end up driving a bike, and if I only, you know, have a semi-detached, then that's fine. And I'll accept that. I'm satisfied with that. Why? Because my real priority is spiritual life. Satisfied with our nature and abilities. Again, our world today is you can be anyone and you can be anything. There's a lot of lifestyle gurus and business gurus who are making a fortune at convincing everyone that they can do anything that they want to do and they can be anyone that they can be. But it's not true. You can't. So anyone here can take music lessons. But not everyone here is going to become either on one side Chopin or on another side a Jai Dev Das. So you're not going to become a musician. You'll be able to play music, but playing music and being a musician are two different things. All the kids sit and they draw and they make all kinds of paintings. But that doesn't mean they're going to become Rembrandts. It doesn't matter how many courses they go, and they can go to the fine arts college downtown. They're still not going to become a Rembrandt. And they can study until the cows come home. But it's not going to happen. Because either you've got it, either you have that talent, either you have that nature, or you don't. So being satisfied with what we are. There was the example of Sridham, the associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who just made a living out of selling banana leaves. His priority was Krishna consciousness, was chanting Hare Krishna, serving the Ganga, and getting the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he would come by. And he was satisfied with that. He wasn't trying to, and that's a pretty simple job. You grow banana trees. Of course, he would also sell bananas and then banana flour because it makes wonderful sabji. And also, even from the stem, banana trees are like, they're like cows. Everything, it's like milk. I mean, like cows, like milk. You make so many things out of milk. So from banana trees, you can have so many different types of wonderful things. Bengalis know about that. They're particularly expert at it. And he was satisfied. He wasn't trying to become a king. He wasn't trying to compete with Vasudev Datta, who was very wealthy. That's all I'm doing. I sell. But being satisfied with who you are and what you are and what you can achieve in the little time that we have to maintain ourselves, because our main priority is Krishna consciousness. And the sixth one is being satisfied with the standards of Vedic tradition. I'll just touch on this point, but we live in a world, we live in what's called the postmodern world. It's beyond the modern world, but we still use this concept of modernity. And modernity has a philosophy. Everything has a philosophy. And the concept of modern is something that you've all come across and also practiced and said, either knowingly or unknowingly, is that modernity means that we're making progress. We're progressing. You can see how we've progressed in terms of travel, how we've progressed in terms of technology. We're able to fly in airplanes. So modernity means that the present is a real improvement on the past. We've really improved on the past, and the future is going to be even better than the present. So we're really going to a future where no one's going to have to work. Computers and robots are going to be doing all our work. We're just going to be able to live a life of enjoyment. And it's going to be like that for everyone. And if we get too crowded on this planet, we'll just go to the moon, or now they're experimenting about Mars. We'll go to Mars and we'll populate there. And we'll just enjoy, and this is progress. But the reality or the statistics of progress is that with all of this quicker travel, ability to be able to communicate with anyone just at a drop of a hat, drop of a pin, people aren't becoming happier. But rather the quality of life, the quality of inner life is decreasing, even though we may say that we're achieving certain things that were unachievable, sometimes even inconceivable before. But nonetheless, we are not becoming happier people, but rather we're becoming more stressed out. We have more stress-related diseases, and although our medical advancement is really, you could say, excellent, but there's no room in our hospitals for all the sick people, despite the fact that so many medical advancement is taking place. But we, namely devotees, and not only just devotees, but there are other class of traditionalists. They're not people who are looking to this concept of the dream, that progress is going towards some dream, which is a dream. It never becomes a reality. That they're going into this direction of a dream, but we're actually fixed in the past. So modernity means looking to the future, and tradition means looking to the past, not past in terms of time or chronology, but looking to a long-standing tradition, which is absolute, perfect, and no need to change. And anyone who's preached comes across this question from people, well, why are you quoting from some Bhagavad Gita that's 5,000 years old? You know, we're in modern times. This is not relevant to us anymore. But our point is, no, it's very relevant. Why is it relevant? Because it's the truth, and therefore it doesn't change. It's not this fleeting or illusory ideology that's constantly changing, and it's changing in all branches, everywhere. We see that in ethics, it's constantly changing. The principles of religion are constantly changing, just like the Pope just declared that God made somebody a homosexual. That, in other words, it's God who decides what our orientation is, or that our knowledge of the world is constantly changing. First, we thought that matter is made up of 5 different elements. Now we think that matter is made up of so many other, I don't know how many elements there are now, 108, 110, and that those are made up of electrons and atoms. But now we see that there's quarks, and then there's other things, and everything's always changing. Our concept of the world is always changing, but traditionalist concept never changes. And are we satisfied with that? So when I bring up this concept of Varnashram, people say, that's not relevant. Is it relevant or isn't? Why is it not relevant? Well, because we're living in the modern day. We're different people now. So we have to have some type of other social structure. What's our social structure? Well, the one that we're living in. That's more relevant. That's what people, where you have gender equality, where you have egalitarianism, where you have so many other things. Yeah, we need to fit into that. And then that's a real dangerous situation. Are we really giving up what our tradition and values are? Because this society is not just a social structure. Everything has a philosophy behind it. And the ultimate philosophy behind it is atheism and hedonism. So are we satisfied with being part of a tradition? And yes, that Varnashram, and that you can read in the 7th canto, that Narada explains how in different ages also the process of Varnashram changes, but Chatur Varnyam Ashristam doesn't. But acting according to your nature and your inherent qualities doesn't change. Those become details change, but principles remain the same. So being satisfied with Vedic tradition, and that is our tradition. Krishna talks about being satisfied with the process of self-realization. Because sometimes we see that, you know, devotees go outside of, for instance, our Krishna consciousness movement or what Srila Prabhupada gave us, because they're not satisfied that someone else is giving more. And being satisfied with the process of self-realization as a whole. So Krishna is speaking here in the Bhagavad Gita, and just a translation.
But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty.
So santushta, this is the word, this is, and it's being repeated here over again. Just be satisfied with the process of devotional service, be satisfied with the results that are coming, as long as you're performing it right, which I should qualify, because from another point of view, devotees are never satisfied with either their level of advancement, or even devotees are never really satisfied. The nature of bhakti is such that a devotee never thinks that they've got enough. Okay, now I've got enough of serving Krishna. And that's how the first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita ends. Narada Muni is given a benediction. Krishna says, ask for blessings. So he says, please bless your devotees so that they're never satisfied with the sweet nectar of your devotional service. And Krishna says, why did you ask that? That's the way bhakti is. That's what bhakti already is. That's the inherent nature of bhakti, is that no matter how much you get of it, you're never satisfied with it. But back to here, but in another sense, we're satisfied with bhakti. We don't want jnana, we don't want karma, we don't want other things. We're just satisfied being servants of Krishna or being practicing servants, practicing, learning how to be pure devotees of Krishna. Satisfied by what we need, Krishna also says.
He who is satisfied with gain, which comes of its own accord.
Very interesting, and we don't have really time to get into it in long detail, but with gain which comes of its own accord. In other words, things that come without too much work. And I tried just in the earlier prioritizing our needs in life, starting with spiritual life, personal life, family life, and then work, that's how things come of their own accord. What comes of its own accord. That then becomes our need. And this is more or less a definition of the Isha Upanishad's quota. So, but I'd like to go a little further to the following verses. And as I mentioned before, we're just investigating a little detail in what is it that we need. This being satisfied with what you need, the satisfaction of what a person needs. And the following verses emphasize that. And from that emphasis, I consider that Narada Muni weighs this as being a more fundamental and essential thing, is that if you're satisfied with your material necessities, because that's what's being emphasized over here, then you can practice a healthy spiritual life, and you can enter into the Varnashram institution peacefully. We'll leave the verses for now, but let's have the translation.
Even if a man is poor, he should not endeavor to improve his economic condition just to maintain his body and soul together, or to become a famous religionist. Just as a great python, although lying in one place, not endeavoring for its livelihood, gets the food it needs to maintain body and soul, one who is desireless also obtains his livelihood without endeavor.
Anyway, this python philosophy is pretty extreme. In other words, all right, we're all sitting here, everyone just stay here and chant japa, and what comes your way, that's all we're going to take. So it's certainly a real far end of the spectrum of what full dependence on Krishna means. But if we use our intelligence, then knowing this proper balance of appreciating what it is that we actually really need, not over-endeavoring, that phrase over-endeavor that we use. That in itself will help us not endeavor to improve his economic condition. So what will come of its own accord, being our karma? What will our karma bring us? And different devotees here have different karmas. So what will our karma bring us if we live a properly balanced life? And let's just continue.
One who is content and satisfied and who links his activities with the Supreme Personality of Godhead residing in everyone's heart enjoys transcendental happiness without endeavoring for his livelihood. Where is such happiness for a materialistic man who is impelled by lust and greed and who therefore wanders in all directions with a desire to accumulate wealth?
So here we already hear about happiness, because earlier the definition of happiness, even dictionary definition, of satisfaction, was connected to a type of happiness that one gets from fulfilling one's goals. But here Narada Muni says, you're going to actually get that happiness just by learning how to be self-satisfied. And of course, that's what that other, what I call the Mula Shloka here, of these verses about the wearing the shoes on your foot. So Narada is here explains that a person's already satisfied. There's a connection between being satisfied with your needs and your ability to engage in devotional service and to actually appreciate the Supreme Lord. So you can just imagine, everyone has that experience of really getting into this hamster's wheel of really spinning, to try and get so many things in life. And we get into a very passionate mode. And that passionate mode makes it very difficult for us to actually be thinking about and concentrating spiritual life. Even if you just, after a whole day of working out there in the world outside, to just sit down and peacefully chant Hare Krishna, but the mind's spinning with so many things, so many problems, so many challenges, disappointments that came up. So, but rather one needs to avoid these as much as possible. And as much as possible is a phrase that Srila Prabhupada would use. And we have to avoid falling into the second category, because here is a traditional Shastric thing where there's a comparison being made. Here's the comparison of the person who's living within his needs, and this is the result of someone who's living beyond their needs and who's driven by this greed. Mm-hmm. Next one. Whoops. Yes, and here comes our Siddhanta verse, which this is the second time you're seeing this, but we'll read it out loud.
For a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there is no danger, even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. For him, everything is auspicious. Similarly, for one who is always self-satisfied, there is no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere.
So how do we cultivate, because I mentioned this point about cultivating satisfaction, and it's the same way that we cultivate anything. We have to have knowledge. We have to be thoughtful. I tried for this thing. It didn't come through. Now, should I really endeavor for it harder in order to get it? Or is this actually Krishna telling me that I don't necessarily need whatever it is that I was striving for? It may be a bigger house, it may be a car, it may even be a trip to going to the Dham, going to India. Do I need it or not? And if I strive harder, what will I be compromising? Maybe I should take some guidance from some friends, see what they think. So sattvam sanjayate jnanam, the principle of sattva guna, of thoughtfulness, is knowledge, to analyze things, and then ultimately make a decision. And we have to make decisions. So here is this protective, prophylactic nature of satisfaction, that if we can cultivate this satisfaction and learn to say, no, that's all right. I'm satisfied with what we have. I don't want to over-endeavor. This is enough. This is okay. Then we become actually protected. We protect ourselves from many disappointments because you're not going to get everything you want in the world anyway. And we're going to protect ourselves from the disappointment of wasting time, which is an invaluable commodity. You can't get it back with anything. You can't purchase time. And rather, that we're putting our time to best use. And then he goes on to the next verse. He says,
my dear King, a self-satisfied person can be happy even with only drinking water. However, one who is driven by the senses, especially by the tongue and genitals, must accept the position of a household dog to satisfy his senses.
So often Shastra explains things in extreme. We don't have to be satisfied with we're not necessarily going to be in a position with being satisfied with just drinking water. But who knows? You may be. If all of a sudden, you know, you're stranded in the desert and you have nothing to eat or drink, you'll be happy just drinking water. It'll be a feast just to be able to get our hands on it. But even if there's little, even if there's less than what we would really like, but still, to learn to adjust to that, because this process of satisfaction is connected to the process of surrender. That we do believe that Krishna is arranging our lives, organizing our lives. So it's connected to Sharanagati, yes. We're dependent on Krishna. These are two of these factors, that Krishna is protecting me, and Krishna is providing for my needs. So should I be dissatisfied with what Krishna is giving? Should I be pleading for Krishna? Oh, please, Krishna, please give me more. Please let me, you know, get this job interview so that I get this raise and so on. Should I really be asking Krishna for these things? Or just leave it to him? Yoga kshema bahami aham. He's going to give me what I need anyway. Why do I bother praying to Krishna for these things? And why should I have these expectations? So you can see it's a material quality satisfaction. It's not a spiritual quality. But nonetheless, that material quality is conducive to our practice of Krishna consciousness and to learning dependence on Krishna. And there's this direct correlation of the satisfaction and dependence on Krishna. And learning dependence on Krishna is the process of surrender. We may say just surrender, Prabhu, but surrender isn't something that you just do just like that. Surrender is itself a process. So how do we learn how to surrender? And now the verses continue, but Narada now talks about what happens if you're not satisfied.
Because of greed for the sake of the senses, the spiritual strength, education, austerity, and reputation of a devotee or brahmana who is not self-satisfied dwindle, and his knowledge gradually vanishes.
Very interesting, isn't it? So look, it says spiritual strength, your education, your austerity, your reputation of a devotee, even reputation, it just gradually dwindles and vanishes. So that's why in the beginning I said that this is sort of a root quality, something that we really need to control and keep our hands on, because otherwise we will suffer spiritually. We're conditioned souls. So sadhaka means a conditioned soul, or at least sadhaka who is still a practicing devotee and not sadhaka who's gone beyond the modes of material nature. So we're dependent on favorable conditions. And much as we may not like it, learning this process of being satisfied is a favorable psychology, a favorable frame of mind for the practicing devotee. And it helps build these characteristics, help build our spiritual strength, helps us get our spiritual education. It in itself is an austerity. It's an austerity, saying no. And then interestingly, reputation. In other words, how do others? No one's gained a good reputation by being greedy. But a lot of wonderful sages and Vaishnavas have become very famous just because they just gave everything. Either like Maharaj Shibi, they just gave everything they had, even their bodies, or they were just satisfied completely depending on Krishna, as was the case of Sudama Vipra.
The strong bodily desires and needs of a person disturbed by hunger and thirst are certainly satisfied when he eats. Similarly, if one becomes very angry, that anger is satisfied by chastisement and its reaction. But as for greed, even if a greedy person has conquered all the directions of the world, or who has enjoyed everything in the world, still he will not be satisfied.
Greedy person, even if he gets the whole world, will never be satisfied. Prahlad Maharaj tells that to Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu, although he had so much, he still wasn't satisfied. He had the universe, and it still wasn't enough. So it's something that, and the example is that if you pour fuel on a fire, it just keeps burning brighter and brighter and brighter. In the beginning, it may appear to douse it a little, but then after, it'll just be even more aggravated than before. So the consequence of, and it's interesting, these examples that, all right, the bodily desires, you could say even lust, it can be satisfied. Even anger can be satisfied, but greed can never be satisfied. And not this lack of satisfaction, this asantushta, or santushta meaning satisfaction, asantushta, this is driven by this greed, and it leads to greed, and that greed becomes the cause of our perishing. So, concluding.
O King Yudhisthira, many persons with varied experience, many legal advisers, many learned scholars, and many persons eligible to become presidents of learned assemblies fall down into hellish life because of not being satisfied with their positions.
So here Narad is telling Yudhisthira Maharaj that be careful, be satisfied with what you have, and he's giving an example that many people fell prey to this greediness, this dissatisfaction, and we're talking about in cultures that don't have the same type of temptations that we do. Because we're driving out of the manor, and as soon as you drive out the manor, there's this billboard and that billboard, and if you turn on your TV or you turn on your computer, everyone's trying to make you greedy. Everyone's trying to actually convince us that we need more, and is fueling dissatisfaction. And in this atmosphere, we're supposed to be self-satisfied. Therefore, we have to be very careful and protect our situation. So, as I mentioned here, these were the six types of satisfaction, and we concentrated on this, what the Bhagavatam emphasizes, living by what we need. And Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita gives us a real rule of thumb.
Be satisfied with anything and everything.
Pretty simple. So he says, santushto jena kena chit. Just be satisfied with what you have. So we can go through different types of things, circumstances we should be satisfied with, but we should just learn this process of satisfaction. And once again, if we do...
For a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there is no danger, even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. For him, everything is auspicious. Similarly, for one who is always self-satisfied, there is no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere.
Hare Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. We went a little over time, and it's 1:45. and I have to go down to South London for in the afternoon. So I'll just leave that topic with you as a thought for the day about this process of cultivating satisfaction. And of course, there's these other 21 qualities which are also there, the other 20 qualities that also could be similarly analyzed and referenced by quotes from the Bhagavatam. Qualities that, like honesty, simplicity, and so on, that we need to cultivate in order to really make sure that we have the round, the proper groundwork for practicing Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki jai. Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi.